Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Tripping Up. This is the first episode of season two, and I can't wait to dive into all of the hilarious, ridiculous, and kind of crazy stories that we've got for you about travel trip ups. I'm your host, Nina Clapperton, travel writer and author of the blog Nina Out and About. My first guest on Tripping Up this season is Aaron Miller, who is an award-winning travel writer, journalist, and author. You can find his work in the Times of London, National Geographic Traveler UK, and all sorts of international publications. He's even written two books on the 50 greatest wonders of the world and the 50 greatest national parks of the world, which is such a good read, and I highly recommend if you're ever going on a road trip and looking for some inspirations. Aaron joins me to talk about 100-mile pub crawl, what real darkness is, stealing from monks, and how we have a bit of a wonder deficit in the West. I hope you enjoy the first episode of season two. Let's get right into it.
Now boarding.
Hi, Aaron. Welcome to Tripping Up.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. We're very excited to have you all the way from the Rockies.
Yeah, all the way from the sunny Rocky. Well, actually today a bit snowy, but we're almost in spring now. So yeah, mostly the sunny Rocky Mountains of Colorado.
You're one of the few guests I think that can rival Canada for snow. So I'm pretty excited that like have another cold person on the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if we quite rival you guys, actually. I have one of my best friends that lives in Montreal and he's always texting me with complaining about how absolutely freezing it is. We do get a lot of snow though. We were dumped on by about 2 feet a few weeks ago. And for an English person where it's like, if you get an inch, they shut down the entire country. It's national news. Like, we've had an inch of snow, shut down the trains, you know? For me, that's pretty exceptional. I'm still like a little kid when that happens though. I'm like straight out having snowball fights with my kids and having fun.
That's amazing though. Yeah, I think like you get jaded to it growing up with it, where like now I just like, I don't know, I kind of feel like the old Scrooge where I'm just like in the corner like, oh, it's snowing again. Like
summer coming, I know.
Yeah, and then summer comes and I do the British thing of, it's too hot, just like yeah, never exactly. Satisfied.
Moan about the weather and you will get by as a British person, perfectly fine. Although, oh my God, shoveling snow, I had no idea how hard work that is. That's a back-breaking job, isn't it? That's the first thing I think now, I'm like to be jaded as well. Like, oh my God, I have about an hour of shoveling snow ahead of me.
Yeah, that's why my older brother actually for one of his birthdays asked for a snowblower because that's his chore. He got it. It's best investment we've ever had.
It's so smart of him.
Yeah, don't buy a teenage boy a snowblower would be my advice. Like, wait till he's a bit older. But it was.
That's a really great way to like circumvent your chore. I love that.
Yeah. So we'd love to get to know you more on the podcast. How about you tell our guests why you travel and how you travel?
So yeah, I'm a travel writer. I kind of quit the music industry about 15 years ago where I kind of worked for most of my 20s and kind of ran off to be a travel writer accidentally. I kind of fell into it. I come from a family of writers. I love writing. That's kind of my passion. And I started out and I kind of really just wanted to get into journalism, and luckily kind of first few things I got published were in travel and kind of just taken off from there. So I write mostly about kind of outdoor travel, adventure travel. I try and write things that inspire people to connect more deeply with the natural world and to see places of the world and to find out about different cultures. And that's what I really love doing. So a lot of the travel I've done for the last 15 years has been, you know, on various assignments and stuff like that, which has been a great way to really explore places deeply. You know, I think that's one of the great things about writing too, is that when you don't have to be a professional writer to do this, of course, either. But when you have like a creative angle, whether it be writing or photography or art or blogging or podcasting, that you're thinking about whilst you're exploring these destinations, it adds another layer, and you're kind of engaging with it and thinking about it on a deeper level. But you're also kind of forced out of your shell and to meet people and to ask questions and to find out about them and their place. And that's just a great way to make friends all around the world. So that's one of the things I love about it.
I think that's a great way to kind of look at travel. A lot of people who've been on the podcast, that is kind of, I think that's a thing that everyone loves so much. Even like I'm a solo traveler. So like I'm an introvert solo traveler. By all stereotypes, I should hate people. But one of the reasons I travel is to meet all these amazing people all over the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's solo travel is great for that. I mean, it's really fun, obviously, traveling with friends or family. And it's great to share those memories and experiences. But I always think when you travel on your own, stuff just happens, right? Like, I think if you're with people, whether you're sitting at the bar and you're with your friends, there's almost a little bubble around you, right? Where people don't necessarily come up and approach you. And maybe you don't have the, you know, the motivation to go up and approach someone else because you're quite happy. But when you're solo, I just find that people come over and they're like, hey, what are you doing here? You know, why are you sitting in this weird bar in the middle of nowhere on your own? And I always think that, you know, serendipitous things just happen to me when I travel alone. And I've been lucky to do a lot of that traveling as a travel writer on my own. And yeah, it's quite a freeing experience in many ways, because you can kind of just go where you want and do what you want and explore without having to kind of accommodate friends and other people. And you can just really go into deeply into the experience itself, which I love.
I completely agree. I think that's a really, yeah, going deep into the experience is a great way to phrase it. That's definitely kind of what it feels like. So now that we know why you travel, how about you tell us about something odd and weird that you've picked up as a souvenir in your time?
Yeah, I love this question. I wanted to tell you, by the way, I love the format of your show. I love the questions that you ask, and I've really enjoyed listening to it and getting into it. Yeah, so my favorite souvenir from travel actually is from one of my first major job. So I'd kind of, in a crazy way, quit this kind of, you know, well-paid job. I was on the career ladder, all was going well, but kind of out of the blue, I just decided to quit it and sort of followed my dream of trying to be a writer. And, you know, I was at that age of kind of turning 30 and just seeing the rest of my life pan out. And it was a great life, right? But it wasn't necessarily, I didn't want to live that life without at least giving this a go, without giving it a shot, you know? And I spent about 6 months trying to get published, and I'd basically run out of money. And I suddenly had this idea. I lived in the south of England in a town called Brighton, and I had actually moved just outside of Brighton to the countryside. So I was actually living in what is now the South Downs National Park, which is it's England's newest national park. And it's a beautiful, beautiful landscape. It's kind of a working landscape. It's a UNESCO biosphere reserve. So it encompasses these, you know, beautiful rolling hills called the South Downs, but also like working farms and lots of history. And so I decided to celebrate the opening of this national park by doing a 100-mile pub crawl along the South Downs Way, which is this kind of 100-mile footpath, historic footpath that links Eastbourne and Winchester together. And kind of as a last-ditch effort, I pitched this to a couple of outdoor magazines and newspapers, and they picked it up. And so I got to, for my first job, I kind of set off. It was the middle of February. It was, you know, February in England. So it kind of like, you almost need a submarine to keep you dry as you're hiking in places like that. And it was an amazing experience. You know, I stopped at, you know, 500, 600-year-old pubs along the way. And I managed to kind of like start the morning by having these giant full English breakfasts in the pub, and then I would stop at another pub for lunch, and then I would finish up in a pub in the evening. And you kind of, you know, rock up to these tiny village pubs where, you know, people don't really get a lot of, you know, a lot of outsiders in it, and they're super friendly, but it's the sort of place where, you know, like the darts stop midair and the pool balls stop midair as you walk in, and everyone's just like, who's this guy, you know? But by the end of the evening, you've made like best friends for life, and you're kind of sharing gossip about who makes the best cream teas and who's going to win the cricket this year and stuff like that. So it's this great sort of local experience, and it passes through a lot of history as well. But right at the end of the walk, historically what would happen is pilgrims, when they walked this and they got to Winchester Cathedral, right next to Winchester Cathedral is the Abbey of St. Cross, and pilgrims would like knock on this door, and they would request the wayfarer's dole, which is a pint of beer and a piece of bread. And to this day, you can still knock on the Abbey door, and if you've completed the South Downs Way, you can knock on the Abbey door, and if you request the wayfarer's dole, they will give you a glass of beer and a piece of bread. And the cup that they give it to you is this kind of little small, almost clay pewter glass cup. And I've still got that. And to me, that's my favorite souvenir, because it's from my first job. And it was the best sip of beer I've ever had. I mean, it was like flat and warm, you know, but it was still the best sip of beer I've ever had. Yeah. So it was great. It was great fun. And it's a great memory whenever I look at it.
That's why I love like these odd souvenirs, where it's something that you've like, yeah, you've connected with, and there's the great story behind it. And I know about pilgrimages, but I've never heard about that one. So that's so cool. And like that you got to keep the cup too. They don't like demand it back or something.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I was just like sort of swiftly putting it in my back pocket, but I don't think you should ever like steal from a monk, right? That's probably got to be some bad karma there. So
yeah.
They give you the cup, and you know, it's a popular hike. I don't think that many people do it. I don't think really that many people outside of the UK know about it at all. Not even that many people within it. But it's a really beautiful part of England and a beautiful walk. I'd highly recommend it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, I think many of our listeners will now be trying to get their own souvenir from that walk. So,
yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, if you can break that, I'm sure that's a record somewhere, but if you can break that record and get a 101-mile-plus pub crawl, then let me know, because I'll be tackling that next.
That would be absolutely brilliant. Cross country, like we'll walk through the Cotswolds next.
I know. If you love hiking, you'll love hiking tipsy. It's even better.
Yes. Especially in England, it'll warm your soul when it gets
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's amazing. And I got to be honest, I'm always appreciative of a travel souvenir that is not a weapon, because I've learned that a lot of my guests seem to have an obsession with either animals or weapons. And
wait a minute, that seems completely bizarre. So they're taking animals home or weapons home as souvenirs? Like
stuffed animals, taxidermy things, antlers, bits and bobs, people keep getting gifted weapons, and I think we need to stop the tradition of weapons as gifts, because
not easy to take back in the airplane.
PSA is going to get really mad at us podcast alone for how much we've unveiled.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really funny. I didn't know that. I don't think I've ever been given a weapon before. I'm kind of feeling a bit left out now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like in a pub fight, you can use a glass if you need to. Like, just, like, pump someone on the head.
Now you're getting prepared. Wait a minute, or maybe you're revealing a secret part of your history that you haven't shared with your audience before. Do tell. Have you glassed someone in a pub before?
I have not.
To hear. I was getting nervous there for a second.
I did live in Glasgow for a while.
Came close.
Yeah, I've witnessed some pub fights, especially on an Orange Circle crawl where you like take the... Because the subway there's a nightmare. It's just, literally a circle that doesn't hit any of the major points of the city, but it hits a lot of pubs. So you get an all day pass and then you just drink at every one.
Oh, I love that.
I was with the Harry Potter Society because they were the one doing it that day. I didn't even realize. So I'm with people in robes and like wizard cloaks. And it turns out drunk Glaswegian men do not take kindly to wizard robes in their pubs.
I know Glasgow well, and that is so funny. It is true that it can be a bit of a rough place at times at night, but there is no one funnier in the world than Glaswegians. I've never laughed so hard than when I'm hanging out with a bunch of Glaswegians and drinking and having fun. So, but yeah, I'm not sure I would brave a Harry Potter robe in a pub in Glasgow.
No, I was glad to be in my civvies. So like I was sitting in the corner petting a dog at the time. So I was like, I don't look like I'm with them. It's okay. I got my pint, I got a puppy, and like, I'll let them fight it out.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the guy dressed as Harry Potter, did he attempt to use the wand at all in the fight?
He didn't have one. I was like,
what?
Unprepared for a duel, bud. Like,
you came out to a bar fight without your wand? What the heck?
You didn't even try to, and it was like, and he was wearing the robes over civvies too. So I'm like, you half-assed this. Like you have not committed. Yeah, that's a moment I actually genuinely forgot about until we were just talking about pub fights. Thank you for the
That's great. Memory. Yeah, I don't know how we got into pub fights, but there you go. At least we can find some humor in violence. That's, you know.
Yeah.
And what else could we do?
Especially because none of us were involved. So it's like we were exactly. just watching the nonsense unfold.
Well, you'd have to try very hard to get in a pub fight on this 100-mile pub crawl. Everyone is like crawling over themselves to be nice to you and buy you a drink. So it'll be the exact opposite of a dodgy Saturday night in Glasgow.
Okay, so I'll tell the Harry Potter guy he doesn't need to bring his wand on that one.
You could do it. You could do it. I would like to see that, actually. That would be a world first. You know, Harry Potter does a 100-mile pub crawl. I mean, it's kind of given Harry Potter a little bit of a dodgy name, but I think that would be really fun. You get some great photos anyway.
It would actually be a great PR stunt. We're going to have to, like, phone
him. I just want to see a drunk Harry Potter now. That's all I want to see.
I'm sure there are many after, like, hours of the wizarding world in the UK.
Just like a really drunk old Harry Potter who's bitter and kind of complaining into his half-empty pint.
That would be so funny. Oh my goodness. We're definitely going to start setting up these events now just to like confuse ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah, that'd be great. Count me in for the next one.
So now our guests would love to know your tripping up story, because we know that travel doesn't always go well. And as a professional traveler, you have many to choose from.
Yeah, I have some few stories. I thought maybe I'd do like a couple of aperitifs until we get to the big one. So one story that springs to mind was I was in Colombia in Bogota. I was doing a story about Colombia, which I love. I have some friends out there and it's an amazing place. And you know, if you ever want to feel like a really awkward Englishman, just go to a Colombian dance floor. I felt like a, you know, almost like one of those action figures who can't bend its legs properly whilst everyone else was like these Latin John Travolta's swinging all around me. But But anyway, so one day we went up in the hills, the kind of Andes foothills behind Bogota. It's really, really beautiful. You kind of leave the city a little bit, and then there's all these sort of small, small houses and villages along these kind of dusty roads. And we took a horse ride up through these villages, and it's a really cool horse ride because if you pay a little bit extra, they bring like a big old 80s style ghetto blaster, and so they're sort of rocking all this kind of salsa samba music as you go up on your horse, and they have a like a holster of aguardiente, which is like this really hot fire liquor that they drink out there, like literally kind of fire water. And so you're doing these shots. I mean, I feel like all of a sudden that all these stories are involving alcohol, and I'm giving myself a bad name. These are like my two alcohol stories out of, you know, dozens. So I don't just drink as I travel. But anyway, we had a few shots as we go up, and I had like the most docile horse out of everyone, right? I literally couldn't get it to go. It was the sleepiest horse ever. And I'm like miles behind the whole group. It's so sleepy. And then we get up to the end point, and we look at this sort of amazing view. And then the guy says, okay, you know, it's time to turn around and go to the stables. And oh my God, as soon as this horse turned around and knew it was going home, it just took off. Like it just started to gallop straight away. And I couldn't stop it. And I was kind of holding on for dear life, like going through these, you know, little Colombian villages, just trying to shout at people to get out of the way. And I was in such panic. I couldn't really remember the Spanish for like, get out of the way. You're about to die. I'm out of control here on this horse, you know? And I literally could not get this horse to stop. I'd never ridden a horse before. And so my first time ever, I'm kind of galloping on a horse. I'm like half holding onto its neck with both hands because I can't seem to hold on any other way. And my legs are just like gripped like iron. And in fact, when I got off the horse, like every muscle in my leg was ripped. I couldn't even walk. You know, I looked like a kind of John Travolta like a John Wayne after he'd been beat up or something, because I had been just like every muscle in my body had been tensed to this. So I survived that. I had some other fun experiences, cliff camping out here in Colorado, which is like an experience where they take you up on a portal edge to spend the night. It's like what mountaineers use to do these kind of multi-pitch ascents of big wall mountains. And I'd done a bunch of climbing and stuff before, but as we were climbing up this route to get to the portal edge, my guide, who's this kind of James Bond of climbing, this guy called Buster Jessic, who was just like cool as a cucumber the whole time, never any fear, everything's totally relaxed. We get up there and there's a lightning strike right next to us, which is a huge killer up in the Rocky Mountains. And this kind of cool guy just starts swearing and muttering to himself like, oh my God, get down quick. And I'm like, oh my God. Like as soon as I saw him being nervous, I sort of understood the severity of it. And we get down to the bottom and I'm like, okay, you know, that's it. We're not doing it. And part of me was really relieved because it was actually terrifying being on the portal edge. I thought it'd be like this kind of stable thing, but it's not stable at all. It was like this surfboard in a stormy sea. It was just rocking with the wind and it felt really incredibly unstable. But Buster had other ideas. We weren't finished. We waited out the lightning storm. He made us hike up the backside of this cliff, like through bear country, scrambling up in the dark, jump over this like big crevasse type thing, and then abseil down in the dark to this portal edge. And I'd never experienced this before, but it was like this kind of ancient lizard part of my brain was like, you are not going to sleep. You are, you know, you are under threat here. And and I spent the whole night just kind of gripping the rope and feeling like completely insecure and wondering how I got myself into this situation. But then, you know, he had said something that night and we had seen all these lights in the houses below us in this town, Estes Park, which is like the gateway to Rocky Mountain. And as the sun came up and the dawn came up and all these colors just sort of flooded the valley, I kind of started to relax. And he said, look at all those people down there. Look at all those lights. They're just, you know, getting ready for their day at work, driving off in their cars, making their breakfast. And they don't know what it feels like to be here. And at that moment, I kind of realized how amazing it was and how lucky I was to be in that place. And so even though I went through, you know, maybe one of the scariest experiences in my life to survive that night and that storm. It was worth it in the end, because I kind of had that very special view, that very special perspective of what it was like to be in that really completely wild place. So those are two of my favorite stories. But the actual scariest thing that I ever did, and this I got myself into a right pickle, and I was in Panama and in a place called Bocas del Toro, and which is like a kind of really beautiful part of Panama on the Caribbean side, like islands and kind of windswept beaches and lots of jungle. And I was staying in a chocolate farm that was a really remote chocolate farm that kind of had a couple of rooms and B&B. It was an amazing place. And it was like actually this English couple that had set it up, and they were doing a lot of work with the local indigenous tribe that lived there. They had a son who was kind of like going to school with all these other kids from the tribe. And it was a really amazing setup. And I kind of asked him, like, you know, kind of, well, so what's there to do here? What can we explore? And they said, oh, you know, one of these guys, he'll take you in a canoe and you can go and explore this local cave. You know, we haven't done it, but we've heard it's really great. They do that. So I was like, okay, that sounds great. And this guy picks me up in a little dugout canoe, and we paddle through the mangrove, and then we get out and we hike through the jungle, and takes a long time. And after a while, we just come to this kind of gaping black pitch cave that just like goes down into the jungle, and you can't even really see where it is. And we each have these head torches, these kind of, you know, flashlights on our head, and we start descending into this cave, and I'm following him because, you know, I don't know where the hell I'm going, and it's pitch black. And as we get in there, it starts to descend into a river, so my feet start getting wet, and the water just starts getting deeper and deeper. And I kind of look behind myself, and it's that time when, you know, you realize that you're surrounded in this darkness all of a sudden, that you maybe couldn't find your way back if you wanted to, because it's just pitch black behind you. And then I feel this like this wind up above me, like this swirling wind, and it's really heavy. And I kind of said to him, like, how are you, you know, what is this wind? How do you have this wind? And he said, no, shines his torch up, and there are thousands of bats, like thousands and thousands of bats, all swarming around this cavern, kind of coming down, swooping on my head and my shoulder. And he's like, we must get down now. And so we go further into the river, and we're crouching down in this underground black river. And then eventually it gets to the place where it's kind of up to my shoulders, and then it's up to my neck, and then I can't stand in this river anymore. And we're swimming through this pitch black underground river. And at that point, my head torch goes out, and I'd run out of batteries on my head torch. So all I have is like his light ahead of me, and he's going super fast. And I'm just kind of swimming through this river, like terrified of what might be underneath me. And we scramble, at one point we kind of scramble up some slippery rocks, and we get to this top. And I think, oh, thank God, you know, we've reached the end. But he actually jumps off this cliff, and I just see his light disappear like 20 feet down, and then splash into this other pool. And then he just starts swimming off. So I have like no choice but to like jump in after him, and, you know, submerged in this deep water. And then, you know, we go down deeper and deeper into the cave until we finally reach the end. And it's taken us like an hour to get there. We're really deep into this cave, and we're sitting there together, and he says, I want to show you what real darkness is. And he switches off his light, and all of a sudden we're surrounded in this, I've never experienced darkness like that. It's so thick. I mean, you could hold your hand like right in front of your eyes and you couldn't see it, but it's so thick. It's that kind of darkness where you almost feel like someone's standing above your shoulder. Like it almost has a presence. And to sort of calm myself, I try to speak to him, and I say, you know, so what is your, why does your tribe come here? What do you use this place for? And I'm thinking maybe they came here like historically to do ceremonies, or maybe they have certain beliefs about it. And he turns to me and he says, oh no, no one else from my tribe will come here. They're too scared of the giant anaconda that lives here. And I was like, let's just say I've never hugged another man so closely in all my life. I wouldn't let him go. the entire time until he took me out of that cave. I literally just kind of grabbed hold of him. I was like, please put your light back on. And I just kind of hugged him around the shoulders the whole way we went back. And we made it back in the end, but the anaconda didn't get us. But I survived the anaconda of Panama. But going back through that river, swimming back through that pool in the dark was maybe one of the scariest things I've ever done. So yeah, that was me messing up. But also it was, again, like, if you can get through experiences like that, they're also some of the greatest experiences you'll have, because, you know, where else would you get to experience something like that? And if you live to tell the tale, it's a good tale, and you'll be dining out on it for a while.
Well, and like, once again, it's kind of based on people you meet, because like, if he hadn't kind of slightly misled you there, you never would have put yourself in that situation.
I know, I came back to the chocolate farm. I was like, where did you guys send me? And they're like, yeah, oh no, we haven't done that. And I was like, yeah, it's intense. There's an anaconda. But
oh my God.
But you know, I think things are, you know, what's normal is different in different places. And I guess if you live in the jungle and you're surrounded by that your whole life, then maybe it's not quite as scary. Although I would say I would probably make an exception for giant anacondas for that, you know, swimming underneath you.
I feel like darkness is like inherently scary, especially when it is like the lack of sense. So like, it kind of with floating in the water, you're also kind of taking away that sense. You take away with like the dampness of it, that's really all you can smell. So you're kind of like, it's like those like flotation chambers that some people pay like millions for, but I think would just be a panic attack.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? I mean, it's just something instinctual that we've evolved to be wary of the dark, you know, and it's something that you can't really control. Those kind of really ancient instinctual things are something that you kind of can't talk yourself out of. And of course, once you open that door, it's hard to shut it again. But I guess if you just try and see it as just another experience, and you know, I really feel like that for me, traveling is also about kind of collecting those experiences, collecting those memories. And because I feel like you take them with you, you know, it's not something that you just have. It's not something ethereal that you just have in that moment. It's something that you kind of take back with you. And in some small way, it becomes a part of you and changes you and helps you see the world differently. So yeah, I always try and embrace those instances, embrace the fear to some extent and try it anyway. I actually just interviewed this guy called Mike Corey, who he has a YouTube channel called Fearless and Far, and his whole ethos was he kind of grew up really scared and paranoid about a lot of things. And then through travel, he actually discovered that it kind of put him in situations which forced him to confront a lot of his fears. And through that, it kind of opened him up in some way. And so now he kind of, his style of travel is really all about, you know, he talks about having a war on fear, that you have to be you have to choose to be fearless in every moment. That fearless isn't something that we attain like enlightenment. Fearless is a choice we make in every single moment. And when we make that choice, we allow ourselves to grow. That's like a catalyst for our own growth and understanding about ourselves. And so it's a kind of magic trick that you can do to learn more about yourself and really experience the world to the full.
I love that, because that is like a lot of the stories that I share, my tripping up story, which I will in a minute, but a lot of the stories that I've shared have been like moments of fear. And actually, like, I have had a snake encounter as well, where another local tricked me and showed me a giant python in a dog food bag, telling me I was going to feed the strays. And then there's a live python in the bag.
Oh my God.
So, and I'm phobic of snakes, so not my best moment. And I apparently never told my mother that story. So she heard it for the first time on the podcast and then called me and said, what? Like, what happened to this place I sent you?
How did I not hear about this?
But I think that is interesting, like the war on fear. And it is true, it's a choice. And like I've always said, travel shapes you. I was like, I moved abroad at 16 by myself. Before that, I was the quiet kid that didn't speak, that didn't take risks. My mom still ordered like my ice cream for me and things like that, because I was too shy. And now like I'm a digital nomad who explores the world, because like you do, you kind of, you get thrown into the deep end and you have to figure it out. And it's so much fun. And it's such a, like, such a good way to learn who you are. Like, I'm all for therapy, but I feel like travel should be prescribed to a lot more people in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot more fun than sitting in front of an office or lying on the couch getting, blaming your mother for all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, I'm
sorry,
I've
mom.
I've done therapy in some cool places because I do virtual therapies while I travel. Oh, so nice. Like, I used to do therapy in like a hammock in Spain outside of a meditation retreat I was working at. Like, yeah. That's so much better. Like, yeah. So I'm going to share my travel story with you now to even the playing field. And we're going to take it back to alcohol, actually.
Nice.
Which I should also say, I don't just drink all the time. In fact, I rarely drink. But I come from a Serbian and Scottish family, both heavy drinkers. So I failed my bloodline quite significantly. It's been talked about at family reunions. It's a thing. So a few years ago, I spent a gap year in Europe. And one of the places I really wanted to go to was Serbia, because I'd never been to my ancestral homeland. My grandmother, who is Russian born, but had to flee to Serbia during the crisis, she grew up in former Yugoslavia, that's now Serbia. My grandfather, his entire family is from Serbia. So it's this place that I feel very connected to, but didn't actually really know. So I went, and also I'll be honest, I was freeloading on a cousin's couch because I was also traveling for a year, having saved up almost nothing. So, but Serbian people are like, they're very much like most cultures in the world, where like you show up and they immediately take you in, they stuff you with far too much food, and they just like give you so much love. And I was really excited for that, because I was like, yeah, like I've been on my own for months now. Like, I was living in a barn in Croatia. I was doing all these like weird things. I was like, I just like to like live for a minute and be like kind of pampered by like aunts and uncles I don't know. But part of that, they decided, like, they know I like travel. So they were like, we're going to take you touring. Don't you worry. We're going to go around and we are going to see Serbia. And I was like, great, local guide. Like, that's what you want, really. You want people who like know the area. I had done no research aside from Belgrade, where I was going to stay part of the time with my cousin. They're from a smaller town called Klisura, which is kind of closer to the Bulgarian border, and where a lot of the Nazi occupation was happening, which is really unfortunate. But so they were like, let's move away from all the like war history and let's go elsewhere. And religion really matters to them. And so I don't really know what he is. Like, I don't understand the degrees of separation of like second and third cousins, but he's like, he's my grandfather's cousin, but like my mom's, I don't know. So somehow this man who's related to me, who I call my uncle, he and his friend, or well, he and his cousin, who is an insane person, like in the best way. The first time I met him, he jumped in front of our car and pretended we hit him. And that was my introduction to this man.
Nice.
Like, I mean, we were going slowly. Like, it was like, we were like stopping in front of the train station to pick him up. And he just jumps out and is like, ah, and I was like, what is going, did we just get involved in an accident? Like, what's happening? So that's how he introduced himself to me. So he and my cousin decided to take me to one of the most famous monasteries in Serbia. That's kind of like the hub of the Serbian Orthodox tradition. And my uncle is an optometrist. So he kind of goes around, he's kind of a traveling optometrist. So like the priest knew him and loved him, because Russian priests, I don't know what happens, but it seems like they're only old men. Like, it feels like you like get put in like a box and you have to wait until your beard is like down to your belly button. And like you grow an extra foot because they're all so tall. And then you age into a 60-year-old man immediately or something. So it's like all these like really old, austere men. They wear these black long robes and then this giant gold cross right on their chest. So they're like, they're very imposing men. And to see them just like start laughing and joking and being like, oh, dragon, and like just like screaming across the church, you forget that they're real people too. So they all come out and they're like, oh, we're gonna do something special for your niece. Like, come on, come on. So we go into this back room, and like, I was raised Catholic, but I don't really understand any religion, I'll be honest. So like, I don't know what this room is, what the like protocol is. Like, I don't know if I'm supposed to start bowing or praying. Like, is this a confession? What's happening? And so instead he starts lining up shots. It's 8 in the morning.
What church is this? I'm almost a convert.
So he just like, but he like, and he doesn't line up like one for each of us. He lines up two for each of us. And in Serbian tradition, there's an alcohol, it exists in many different places, but basically it's called šljivovica, and it's like a plum drink. And so they often call it schnapps in Croatia as well, because they're basically the same, even though they just hate each other, so it can't be the same. But it's essentially like drinking wiper fluid. Like it's not that it doesn't taste good, but it will kill you. And you should never drink it. So I'm there at 7 or 8 a.m. It's spring as well. So also I'm on a ton of allergy meds because I'd never had allergies before. I show up in Serbia in spring and I've had allergies ever since. I think I caught them in Serbia. So I have all this Benadryl in me. And now they're like, okay, shots. But like my uncle's driving, so he can only have one because apparently one is allowed. I don't know. It doesn't seem allowed. So then they're like, okay, you take his as well. So now I have four shots in front of me. And then his daughter, who's there as well, she's like, oh no, I don't want any. So now I get hers. And I was like, I'm supposed to do 6 shots at 8 a.m.
Be rude, right, in that situation. You know, it's like, gotta do it.
So I was sitting there like preparing to do, like I was in my head, I'm like, okay, how soon do I have to run outside to throw up after immediately drinking all of these?
Is it appropriate to throw up in a church you've just been invited into? Yeah.
Exactly. Can I ask them for like something to eat to go with it? Because like, this is not going to go off. Yeah. Oh my God, a holy bucket would be amazing. So I'm getting ready just to like puke my guts out. And then they just start laughing at me because they see me reaching for them. And they're like, no, we're not going to make you do 6. We're not crazy. And I was like, oh, thank God. Thank your God. Thank my God. Thank everybody's God, honestly. So then they take away 4. And I was like, but I still have to do 2? What? And so in the end, we managed to negotiate with the priest down to 1, because apparently that's when it's real rude. So I had to have this. And I've had it a couple times before. I've had it, like, we often do it at Serbian, like, gatherings at my house. I had it at, like, their house when I first arrived, again, to be polite. So I expected it to, like, not be great. But what I didn't know is that priests are apparently superhuman. So, like, where normal šljivovica is, like, 70 proof, they go for, like, 95 proof.
Wow.
So, and this is a full shot glass of this, like, clear liquid that looks unassuming. So I do the shot. And I'm not kidding. It immediately made me cry. Like real sobbing, like not just like, oh, a little bit, not like, oh, cause I'm coughing. Like tears are streaming down my face because of how, like, I was so sure I could start breathing fire at that moment, just because like, that's how everything, I could feel my entire digestive system. I don't know if that's like a special type of cleanse. Maybe that's like, it's holier that way. I don't know. But I felt both dead and alive all at once.
That's a great way to put it.
And like, luckily it was just the one but I got out of there, and I got to tell you, I was drunk for the rest of the day. Like, and I'm a bit of a lightweight. I'm not that much of a lightweight. So it was, I had to sleep it off in the back of the car on the way to our next destination.
I can just imagine you like slurring your way through all these Serbian sites afterwards.
Genuinely, I think that was probably the case. And like, I could like barely keep my eyes open for a little while in the car. And like, because I do have a tendency, they used to make fun of me there as well. Because like, as a kid, I used to get car sick. So I trained myself to fall asleep in cars. That way, like, I would just pass out. I've since learned that it might be like a learned behavior, because my grandma used to like drug my mom with cough syrup when they would go on road trips to Florida to their house there. So maybe it's like by osmosis, like my body retained that knowledge through the gene pool. But so I used to fall asleep in all these car journeys, and they just laugh and be like, oh, she's asleep again. Or like, we'll go for a drive and Nina can have a nap. Yeah, so I think that like they were already making fun of me for that. So I was trying really hard to hide how much this had hit me, because I was like, I'm already the weak Canadian. I don't want to be like the really weak Canadian.
Oh, that's great. That's a great story. And you know what? It's part of the world I really want to see, actually, as well. I recently did a story about a guy walk through the Balkans because it's kind of this misunderstood region, but it's, you know, and people in Europe often don't even think of it as Europe or don't go there. And historically it's kind of had this really unfair, bad rep, but I hear all the same things that you're saying. They're just incredibly warm, friendly people. And now that I know they drink wiper fluid, I'm in 100%.
Well, they drink a lot of other things too. Like my grandmother, I recently wrote a blog post actually about visiting Serbia in spring. And my grandmother's my unofficial editor. She's a 92-year-old woman who can't see it. So like her computer reads it to her. And she's like, she'll call me every week, like, okay, Manjki, here's where I found a typo. Here's what I didn't like. Here's what I would have added. And I'm like, yeah, you would have added, but I've never like, so she started telling me when she was 16 and she got drunk off of, it's like the first time she got like absolutely shittered. People had like a barrel of this special, sparkling wine in their house. And like, I didn't know sparkling wine could come in a barrel, but apparently in Serbia. And so she's like, you should have written about that. And I was like, it didn't happen to me. What? How? How could I write about it?
I love that. That's great. I wish my grandmother edited me.
Well, you'll find some great stuff there. And if you want to adopt grandmothers, I got to tell you, they are all ready for extra grandkids over there.
Yeah, like, you'll just send my work to your grandmother. That sounds even better.
There you go. Like she would be so happy. Like most of what she does is be like, okay, I found this person. Like she gets Russian television in Canada. She's like, okay, there's this travelogue on Russian television and he did this. And here's what I didn't like about it. And I'm like, I don't know him. I can't give him your feedback.
What? You work in the industry, just phone him up.
Well, also because they're usually reruns from like 40 years ago. So I'm not even sure if he's still alive.
Just don't tell her that.
No, I let her live in her. I'm just like, yep, okay, I'll let him know. He'll change it for next time. Promise.
Yeah, exactly. That's how to play that one.
Well, now that we both shared some of the less glamorous sides of travel, we always like to end on a travel triumph when tripping up. So if you could share with us something that inspires you about travel or your favorite travel moment, just to kind of help us remember why we love it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what's important to me about travel, why I love travel, is at the end of my podcast, I always say two things. And the first thing is, the more we look for wonder in the world, the more the wonder of the world becomes a part of who we are. And that's really important to me. I love the concept of wonder anyway. I wrote a book about the 50 greatest wonders of the world. And I think that we're in some way in our society today in the West suffering a bit of a wonder deficit. I don't think that we have enough wonder in our life. I think that, you know, we've evolved to live out under the stars, and most of the time in cities we don't even see them anymore, and we kind of evolved to be connected to the outside world and to all these natural sources of awe, but now we're kind of connected to TV screens and laptop screens, and of course a lot of that is a necessity, but I feel that we're suffering something from that. I think that wonder is the seed from which a lot of the best things in life grow, science and art, creativity. And when we have that wonder deficit, we kind of shrink our imagination and we shrink our creativity and we lose something in ourselves. So I think that, but I also think that it doesn't have to be about going to the Grand Canyon or the Great Pyramids or anything like that. It's about a perspective. It's about how you look at the world. And if you look for wonder in the world, then you begin to see it more. And when you begin to see it more, it becomes a part of who you are and becomes that filter through which you understand the world. And so for me, you know, I kind of call myself a wanderer. Sometimes I try and collect those moments of wonder. And that's really important. And the other thing I say is dare to be truly alive. That's how I finish each episode, dare to be truly alive. And what I mean by that is so many of us live these prescribed lives in which we feel that there's a way to exist, you know, that the clique that we're born into through our family and friends and the school we went into and the country we grew up in, that way of life is kind of, we're destined to it. We're, you know, that is the only way of life. And I think when you travel, you start to understand that that's just one way of life among many. That's just one set of values and beliefs among many. And I think when you start to realize that, it opens something inside of you, because it allows you to kind of choose yourself more freely and authentically. And it allows you to maybe live a life that is very different to the lives of the people you grew up with, but connects with you more deeply and kind of allies your passions and interests with your skills and talents, and that's how you put what's worthwhile from yourself into the world. So I think you have to dare to do that, though. I think it takes courage to do that, to break out of that mold. You know, we're also, as human beings, we're kind of designed to be herd animals. We're kind of designed to fit into the tribe. And so, but now the tribe doesn't have to be that small group of people that we grew up around. That tribe can be any one of a number of tribes that exist around the world, you know, and by that I mean different ways of thinking about life, different values, different different ways of living your life. And so, yeah, I think that when you dare to be truly alive, you dare to live the life that truly means something to you. And I think travel can do that. And that's what I love to talk about. And that's really what travel's all about for me.
That's absolutely beautiful. I don't want to say anything else because I'm worried I will ruin the beauty of that statement. I mean, genuinely, you put it in words perfectly. And I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining us on Tripping Up, Aaron.
Oh, thank you so much. I've had a lot of fun, Dina. I really appreciate it.
Attention passengers, we've now reached our destination. We hope you enjoyed the flight and have a nice day.
Aaron ended on such a high note that I'm going to keep this short and simple and say that this was such a fun episode. I think we learned so much, and I am getting ready for a 100-mile pup crawl now. Although maybe not with Slivovica, because I think that would knock me out after like the first foot. If you want to hear more about Aaron, check out his podcast, the Armchair Explorer Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. It's one of my favorite podcasts ever. You can actually find it in my roundup of the best travel podcasts on Nina Out and About. The Armchair Explorer Podcast is an adventure storytelling podcast that's set to music and cinematic effects. Every episode, one of the world's greatest adventurers tells their best story from the road. There's no long-winded interviews, no hums and haws and things that you don't care about. You just get straight to the action and hear right about the adventure. As a bonus, you'll get to know more about Aaron and hear more of his adventures as well. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of Tripping Up. As always, you'll hear from me in another 2 weeks with another amazing episode of Tripping Up and our second episode guest, who has some interesting couch surfing tips for you that might put you off using the platform. Let's find out in 2 weeks. Have a great time, guys. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.